Why are there still so few women in science? That was a question posed by a New York Times article a few weeks ago. In the third paragraph, I learned that the author was one of the first two women to graduate from Yale with a Bachelor's of Science in Physics. So as I often do, I flip to the end to glance at her bio, thinking, who is this woman? Is she a professor of physics? Is she maybe a Nobel Prize winner in physics? No, to my surprise, I found that the author, Eileen Pollack, is a professor of creative writing at the University of Michigan. She is also the author of numerous novels, including Breaking and Entering and Paradise, New York. Eileen Pollack now joins me by phone. I'm really happy and excited to be talking to you because I have to say, I can't remember when more of my friends sent me an article at the same time. Everybody was talking about it. So you graduate summa cum laude from Yale, having excelled in quantum mechanics and gravitational physics, yet you don't go on in science. Why not?
Well, that's what I set out to figure out. I wasn't sure myself, which I think is part of what I've discovered, that quite a few women walk away from science courses, careers in science, without being quite sure why they're walking away. It feels shameful to want to be something, want to do something, and then not go on in it. And I think so many of us just stop and don't explore why. So actually, a few years ago when Larry Summers, then president of Harvard, was asking why there were so few women even today in the sort of top echelon of professors in physics and math at Harvard or anywhere else, I was trying to think, why did I walk away? And you know, I really wanted to be a physicist, and I was doing well. But for one thing, I was exhausted. I had come to Yale from a public high school in upstate New York. I was very poorly prepared to be majoring in any science or math. When I was in junior high school, the students in my class were given an exam in science and math, and the top-scoring boys were skipped ahead so that when they got to be juniors or seniors in high school, they could take advanced physics or calculus at the nearby community college. But I wasn't allowed to join them because, as my principal said, I was a girl, and girls never went on in science and math, so I'd just be wasting a seat, and it would ruin my social life. So I basically had to teach myself physics. I had a physics course, but it was very general, and had to teach myself calculus. And then when I got to Yale, not only were all my classmates boys, but they had gone, most of them, to very good private high schools and magnet schools like Bronx High School of Science. And they were just so far ahead of me that it took me, you know, a number of years to catch up. And even when I caught up and sort of moved ahead, I never felt confident. It was very distracting to be the only girl in any of my classes or labs. I can't say my professors were discouraging. I mean, the interesting thing is I had some wonderful, they were all men. There were no women professors in those days in math and physics. And they were wonderful guys. It's just that they didn't encourage me to go on. Nobody seemed to care whether I went on or not. And one thing I found is that that's key, that women, if they aren't encouraged to do something, often think there's something wrong with them. If they were really good, someone would tell them to go on. Whereas for most of my male classmates, they weren't looking for that kind of encouragement. They just assumed they would go on.
And so that was 1978 when right. You graduated. But haven't things improved a lot since then? I mean, I think most of us assume that with as many changes as there have been and the numbers of women in college in general growing every year so that women become the majority or now the majority of undergraduates. Hasn't that changed a lot?
Well, it's changed in other subjects. It hasn't changed much in physics, math, computer science, engineering. It has changed in biology, although interestingly enough, the sort of psychology, even within the women who've gone on in biology, hasn't changed that much. So what do I mean? When I started this project, I was just going to write about my own experiences and try to use my own experiences to figure out at least why I hadn't gone on, why women my age often hadn't gone on. And then I thought, well, let me follow up and give the book a happy ending and show how things are different now. And I went back to my high school and to Yale to see what had changed. And on the surface, a lot had changed. So at Yale now, there were a few women professors in the physics department, and the chair of the department was a woman. And you saw more women undergraduates in the classrooms. But one of the professors at Yale held a tea so that I could get a discussion going with a few women science majors. And she said to me, you know, I don't really think anybody's going to show up. And then 80, 90 young women clamored into the room, and their stories were worse than mine. I was shocked. They were talking about their experiences in high school, sort of in their physics and math classes, where they were teased about being girls doing science and math. Teased not just by their male classmates, but by their teachers. They reported feeling sort of as if they didn't fit in, even in their science and math classes at Yale, feeling as if boys wouldn't date them if they found out they were physics or math majors, being very apprehensive, of course, about juggling a career in the sciences or math with childcare, also feeling as if they weren't being encouraged to go on. And I was very surprised by that and very taken aback.
So one of the things that you mention is, quote, the unimaginative ways in which science and math are taught. What's wrong with our math and science instruction in this country?
Well, that would take a book or two or three on its own, and there are people working on that. But because science and math are so devalued in our culture, I mean, there's a strange phenomenon, because on the one hand, we say we value science and math. We all appreciate the technological advances that those fields have given us. And yet, we don't value the people who work in those fields. We in America see scientists and mathematicians as weird, geeky sort of nerds. And even boys in America, even American-born boys, don't really want to go on. It's not cool to be good in physics and math. It's still not cool to go on in those fields. But for girls, it's even sort of geekier and less acceptable. That has the effect of keeping people from going on in those fields. So it's very hard to find science and math teachers at the junior high and high school level. And certainly in elementary school, a lot of the teachers who are teaching it report being scared of math and science themselves. This is too broad a generalization, because there's some wonderful, wonderful people teaching math and science in our high schools. But by and large, we don't have people who really love the subjects, who really understand them at a very deep level, who know how to convey their love for the subjects. You don't really see the beauty of the subject until graduate school, you know. Really, this is it's like learning music. It's just this beautiful way of seeing the world. And that's not how the subjects are being taught. They're being taught to the test. They're being taught in ways that just really don't bring out what's cool or beautiful about the subjects.
And yet still a certain number of boys will gravitate to these fields and sort of form their own subcultures, I've noticed, in schools and even in broader communities. But somehow the girls are not finding their way into that or into a parallel community.
Well, what's very interesting is they found, first of all, that girls who tend to be good in science and math also tend to be good in language arts and the humanities. So they have more choices, whereas boys who are good in science and math tend proportionally, of course, these are, you know, broad numbers, but tend to only be good in science and math, and they're not as good in the language arts. The boys are then more encouraged in junior high and high school and college to take physics, to take calculus, to take computer science, whether or not they're that interested in it, whether or not they're that good in it. Whereas if a girl is wavering, she's not pressured to go on to take those courses. Sometimes I found that the guidance counselors weren't even steering the girls toward those courses at all, weren't even suggesting them. But certainly if a girl is taking a physics course and having trouble and says, I want to drop out, she tends to meet less resistance from parents, teachers, guidance counselors than the boy who's struggling and isn't allowed to drop out.
I know a friend of mine is an engineer. She actually teaches engineering. And she was saying that, you know, she's about my age and we're both about your age, you know, that 70s generation coming up in the sort of throes of the second wave feminist movement. And she said she wasn't particularly passionate about engineering. She didn't really want to do it, but she felt like she should do something non-traditional because she was good at it. And I think that now women don't have that, they don't necessarily feel that pressure. I mean, there's no women's movement to maybe give it to them, but also that, you know, people are just in a certain way more comfortable being what they are. And maybe women just aren't that interested in these nerdy fields where you work so much in isolation. And maybe they just prefer socially involved fields like law or medicine or social work or psychology. What about that?
Well, a few things. First of all, you know, that's something I'm hearing from a lot of men who've responded to the article. And of course, I heard this even before the article came out. Well, what's wrong with if women don't like the hard sciences? They like people fields. They like working with animals and plants and nice, warm, fuzzy things. And if that's true, fine. But it's such a circular argument because I think girls are raised to want to be around people-y kind of things and fuzzy animals. And then that acculturation is then used to say, see, girls don't want to, you know, study machines. Or when you're a musician, you're not studying people. Music is even more abstract than math, but nobody says girls shouldn't be musicians. A lot of the sciences are very collaborative. You're in a lab, you're with people all day. Why should girls not be interested in the beauty of the universe? I think the other change from our generation is that the culture has become a much more hyper-feminized, romanticized in ways it wasn't in the 60s and 70s. So we grew up thinking we didn't want to be princesses, like, you know, let's do away with the whole Cinderella thing. Whereas now it's little girls are like, there's this whole princess industry, and you should wear, you know, stiletto heels and walk around with your cleavage showing and get some guy to propose to you in some, you know, super romantic way and have this big wedding that you plan for a whole year and then be, you know, this mother where you're raising your kids organic, you know, vegetables from scratch. It's so much more relentlessly focused on hyper-femininity and romanticized sort of marriage and child-rearing that really is much less compatible with the traditional, you know, sort of physics, math, computer science, engineering culture than it was even in the 70s. That, to me, it's no surprise that women are even less, you know, sort of attracted to the what's still a pretty traditional male culture where, you know, sometimes you can't go into the lab wearing fancy clothes because they're going to get ruined. But also, there's still a feeling, at least in America, that if a woman goes into a sort of a lab or an academic science department at a university, she won't be taken as seriously as a scientist if she looks girly. So you start dressing down. You start wearing your T-shirt and jeans or your sweatshirt or whatever. In the 70s, you know, we were all wearing jeans and T-shirts anyway.
And just to give some concrete figures to go along with what we've been saying, you say that 1/5 of physics PhDs in this country are awarded to women. Of all the physics professors in the U.S., only 14% of women.
Right.
The numbers of Black and Hispanic scientists are even lower. In a typical year, 13 African Americans and 20 Latinos of either sex receive PhDs.
And that's not percentages. That's absolute.
Right. Those are numbers. 13 people. So 1/5 of physics PhDs are awarded to women, and half of those women are originally from the U.S. So is there a difference in other countries and cultures in how the sciences are treated and how women are treated in science?
Yes, very much so. And I think if Americans can see that, then they'll understand what's going on, that how cultural this is, because I think we just take it for granted that scientists are male nerds. And that it's, you're not going to be popular, you know, you're going to have your hair sticking straight out of your head. You're going to be like the nerdy guys and the nerdy women on the Big Bang Theory. But there are a lot of cultures where it's not at all unusual for women to go into physics or engineering or computer science or math or whatever. And it's not seen as a male or female pursuit. It's seen as a sign that someone's very creative or intuitive. It's sort of like saying you're an artist or a musician. And women, those women get to the United States sometimes. I've been getting all sorts of letters from foreign-born women who came to the United States and were just shocked. Suddenly there was this notion that it was odd for them to be doing science, or that they weren't couldn't be feminine or whatever, and they just didn't know where that came from. You know, and a lot of these are women who were brought up in Soviet bloc countries and in some Asian countries, even in Africa. When I was at Yale at this tea where all these women showed up, this one girl said, I don't know what you are talking about. My boyfriend, he brags that I am smarter than he is. He loves that I am a physics and math major. And one of the girls said, where did you grow up, on Mars? And she said, no, I grew up in Spain. I am Spanish.
Yeah, I know in Palestine, I think a majority of the engineers are women.
One big difference, too, is in other cultures, there's often better daycare. And so we're losing a lot of women. If you're working in a lab, it's harder. You can't bring the lab home to do after your kid is asleep the way you might be able to, say, bring some legal briefs home or whatever. You know, but I want to point out, too, that one of the major findings that I talked about in the article is this new study from Joe Handelsman at Yale about how pervasive gender bias still is in the sciences, and how women, even if women are succeeding in the field, they themselves might not realize how much harder it is for them than for the men doing exactly what they're doing. So this study was key. In the study they sent out identical job applications from two candidates, one named John, one named Jennifer. And everything was exactly the same in both packets, the CV, the recommendation letters, the cover letter, everything about the job experience. The only thing that was different was literally the name, John or Jennifer. And they sent this to scientists in physics, chemistry, math, biology, engineering, whatever, at research universities across the country, to male and female scientists, both young and old. And the response was amazing. The number of people who judged John as much more competent, much more hireable, much more deserving of mentoring than Jennifer was very significant. And this was true whether it was a male or a female doing the hiring, young or old. Even in biology, where at least half the people now, you know, practicing in the lab are women, they judged Jennifer more likable, right? And if they did hire Jennifer, her starting salary was almost $4,000 lower a year than John's, and these are not huge salaries, so that's a very significant percentage. And so if you're Jennifer, you think everybody likes you, right? But you're wondering, why didn't I get hired? Or I got hired, but nobody's mentoring me, or I'm not getting paid very much. And it's just harder for you than it is for John, right? And so, and science is not the easiest field, right? So just doing the work would be hard, but you have this extra burden. And then if you add to that the extra burden of childcare, which is probably going to be a little harder for Jennifer than John because she's got to bear the child. You know, women are still tend to do more than 50% of the childcare. It's really no wonder that we're losing so many of the Jennifers. But the study was really important because scientists think that they're objective. And these kinds of studies have been done with identical resumes in other fields, for, you know, difference between somebody whose name sounds African-American versus someone whose name sounds white. So these sorts of studies have been documented for years, but not in the sciences and not with gender bias. And the scientists have been shocked. I got 1,200 emails about this article in addition to the 1,000 that the Times printed on their website. And what's astonishing to me, looking at both sets of emails, most of them positive, but the negative ones, often from scientists trying to dispute the study, are so illogical. I can't believe they're coming from scientists. So somebody said, well, this study doesn't prove bias, because what's probably going on is that whoever is doing the hiring, it's logical that he would discriminate against Jennifer because he knows from experience that John, that men make better scientists. And he knows from experience that most women drop out to or aren't very productive because they have babies. And so it's not bias, it's experience, which is the most illogical. Where there's never been a study that said men are better scientists than women. What's he's basing this on? Three examples that he think he has in his brain? That's the definition of bias.
Eileen Pollack is professor of creative writing at the University of Michigan and the author of several novels, including Breaking and Entering and In the Mouth. She got her bachelor's in science from Yale before going on to get a master's of fine arts from the University of Iowa. She's currently working on a book on women in the sciences and recently wrote a piece for the New York Times entitled, Why Are There Still So Few Women in Science? You're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael.